And welcome into the latest edition of the Rinkwise podcast, New England Hockey Journal production. I am your host, Evan Marinofsky, alongside Patrick Donnelly. And we are joined today by a great guest, Kent's head coach, Dale Reinhart. Dale, welcome
How's
to the show.
How's it going, guys? Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
It's good. It's good. Pat, I mean, we're finally back, and it's nice we have someone with us. I mean, I think people were getting a little sick of just me and you, Pat. So now we gotta get someone else in the fold.
Yeah, I know. Now we're in the off season and it's a little easier to work in guests. Schedules are a little slower and stuff. So looking forward to it.
Hopefully I don't disappoint.
I don't think you will. I think you're gonna be great. The people are gonna love you. So what are you up to right now? I mean, I know hockey's done. I know you're dean of students. You're still busy. What's the life of Dale Reinhart right now?
Yeah, no, I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, it's always an interesting transition from the hockey season coming right as we kick off March break, especially if you have a good finish to the season and win your last game like we were fortunate enough to do this year. It's you have this awesome moment and then it's like, all right, everybody get in the car with your parents and we'll see you in a month. So it's always a weird experience, but we're back in it full swing here. And this time of year as a dean of students is a busy one. We have all sorts of school traditions and preparing for next year and all of that stuff going on. But it's also that March 10th to April 10th time is a really crucial time for us too, as that admission cycle gets underway for the following year and checking in with new families and trying to convince people to join our community. And so it's been a busy couple of months, but it's been great.
On the hockey side, when you're trying to get kids in and your hockey kids you want, you've been there at Kent for, I believe, is it 10 years now?
This was actually 11 years.
11 years. 11 years. How have you noticed that change? Has anything changed in that regard?
No, I mean, I think it goes through cycles. Nothing too much. I mean, we've obviously had a lot of changes at our school. We've had a new head of school now for the last 4 years. We've had a new athletic director for, I think, 2 years now. Our director of admissions has changed a couple times in my time here. So just kind of getting to know different personalities and working with different people. But I think at the end of the day, our mission is always the same. We want to find mission appropriate kids for the school who will add to our community in a wide variety of ways that will also be great hockey players and represent our program in a way that makes us proud. So that whole process, the ins and outs and the specifics of it might change a little bit year to year. And I think obviously we've had some success in recent years. And so if anything, that process gets a little bit easier. We get a little bit more, we win some more battles on the recruiting fronts, get a little bit more interest without us having to drum it up. But it's pretty consistent year to year.
And it's interesting because now it's spring and the summer's coming up. And I'm curious, like, what's your view on what hockey players should be doing in the spring? I feel like they're like, oh, train a lot. Oh, go play another sport. Like, can you do both? Like, what's your view of it?
I do think you can do both. I mean, it's hard. I think it's really hard the way that the culture is done. I would love for all of our kids to just be playing another sport, particularly in the spring. I recognize the fall and in the prep school hockey world, our season's shorter than most kids are used to when they come in to us and they're playing split season. And so I know it's hard to play another sport in the fall, but I'm a firm believer that when we can get our kids involved in playing another sport in the spring, it's awesome. I just think for a variety of reasons. One, I think it's a good break for them physically and mentally. Some of them will play sports that maybe they're less intense about, but that as a school, we're still really competitive in, whether it's golf or rowing or lacrosse and baseball. So I really love for them to get away, continue to compete and kind of have that element of their athletic profile still engaged, get coached by somebody else, meet other kids on campus, and just kind of get engaged in our community in a different way. So that's something I really love to see our guys do. I also recognize that a lot of them have big things that go on in the spring, whether it's our seniors who are going off to junior camps, things like that they have to be prepared for. Some of our younger guys trying out for USA Hockey, trying to make it to USA Hockey Select Festivals in the summer. All of that stuff starts to come to a head here in the spring. So if they're on the ice a little bit, if they can find ways to do that, then that's great. But I love for them to get away from it too.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. You need a little break sometimes. You do a lot of baseball stuff, so you need to do some baseball too.
Yeah, I mean, specialization was kind of a topic I heard, like, didn't really bring up with coaches off and on throughout the season. Like, we had that girls hockey on the growth of that story back in the winter. And one of the things we brought up was specialization. And it's an entirely different can of worms. And you kind of went into that already. But do you think with like not to get a little off track here, Evan, but like, when
right.
you see
oh no
teams,
please do
whether like if it's a team like Dexter going to a full season model yeah. or even you have academies and whatnot, where specialization falls into that and kind of still trying to yeah. broaden these athletes and student athletes' horizons.
It's hard. It definitely is hard, like particularly with the way social media is these days and kids knowing everything everybody else is doing and kind of that race to nowhere. And for every story that you hear about a kid who had great success because they were grinding away at the ice rink for every minute of every day, there's always those kids too. Like I go back to a guy we had, Anthony Rinaldi, a couple of years ago, I think went on to be the leading scorer at Union College. Like, he didn't play fall hockey while he was a kid. He played soccer. He was our leading scorer on our soccer team. He played on our varsity tennis team and was one of the captains of that team, and he did just fine. And he, as I said, he went off to Union, was a leading scorer. I think he's still playing pro right now. I think he just finished a year over in Dundee in the EIHL, and he was just fine as a hockey player, despite not having to be on the ice every second of every day. Now, I think there's a component of it that most of the kids that are playing for us absolutely love it too. And so that's hard too, is I think some of the specialization piece when you get to our kids' age is they just love being on the ice and they want to be out there. It's not so much they're being driven by like, I need to get to X place. They just really have a passion for it. But I think it is one of those things that you do have to keep in check and get away from it a little bit. And even the guys in the NHL aren't on the ice 12 months a year. They're taking some time off too. And so I always think it's wild when you see kids at the U16 age who are playing more hockey games in a year than guys who are doing it professionally. That's kind of a crazy thought to think about, that these guys are getting paid to do it and you're playing more hockey than they are.
A lot of that.
Yeah, that's that point.
There's yeah. a lot of that. We see it. And it's funny, like, because now I feel like every kid plays fall hockey. I don't yeah. know of anyone who doesn't. Like, do you ever see it going back the other way? Do you see it, like, ever swinging in the other direction?
Yeah, I don't see it fully swinging back, but I do think that we've reached the end of the pendulum swing, and maybe it comes back a little bit more to reality. We'll see. I mean, again, it's become big business too, and that's the part that's hard. It's get pushed on these kids and their families all the time, and you have to do it this way or you're not going to make it. And that's really challenging for that kind of keeping up with the Joneses perspective. But I do think that finding that healthy balance is really important for kids. And I don't know exactly what that is. We've always had this traditional mindset of you play three sports is a well-balanced athlete, but what's to say it's not four or five or two? Like, what makes it three? And so I think just kind of making sure that kids mentally and physically are healthy and they still have the passion for it. And that's the thing that I talk about all the time when you mentioned academies and full season teams. And one of the things that I love about our model is there's never game 52 in February that means nothing. And got a chance to play a lot of different hockey along the way, play AAA growing up, had a chance to play college, a little bit of pro afterwards. And that passion that comes with that shorter schedule, like what I played at the college level, when you're playing 35 games as opposed to game 72, and it's your fourth game in five nights and you're just trying to get through it. That's something that's hard to replicate in a long season. And so I love that about our game. And I think it really actually helps prepare our kids well for playing at the collegiate level, where every game means so much. And there's never a throwaway game for us. And I know at the collegiate level too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something Evan and I kind of touch on from time to time. The punchline is always, oh, it's Thursday night against the Anaheim Ducks at 10 PM.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's like, why are we here?
Exactly. Exactly. And honestly, like I remember played a little bit in East Coast League after college, and there are days like that where you're kind of looking at the guy next to you, like, just don't hit me and we'll get through this together. And I just love the passion and the intensity that comes with our games. I always look at it, it's like you watch the 82 game regular season and aptly at this time, now you watch the playoffs. Look how different those two games are. They're like different sports. And so I always liken that to kind of that full season versus what we're doing. We're kind of like the playoffs right when the puck drops at the beginning of our season. And I love that. It's just what makes hockey fun.
Well, I think that's not to cross sports here, but I think that's why the NFL is so big. I mean, there's 17 games. It's one a week. That's the one game you get. Every game matters. And everyone is tuned in. And I think that's one thing that like hockey and basketball professionally can suffer from a bit, is like that 45th game of the season when it's like Celtics against the Charlotte Hornets. And you're just kind of like, all right, well, it's one of 82.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little bit of your career, and I find it really interesting because it was not long ago. It was not long ago. It was
really long ago.
It wasn't long ago. And you went right from prep to Holy Cross.
I did,
You don't see that much anymore, if ever. And are you surprised that that's different? I mean, do you think your path would have been vastly different if you were a kid nowadays?
You know what? To be honest, it wasn't that different when I was playing. When I was playing, I was the youngest kid on our team at Holy Cross my freshman year by like a full year. I think my second year, I was the youngest kid on the team still as a sophomore. So it wasn't that it was as so much different then. I think I was just fortunate that I got an opportunity. And for me, I don't think junior hockey was the right path. It's amazing. You have 8,000 people telling you all the things that you need to do when you're going through that process. And I have memory of that for sure. But you got the opportunity with Coach Pearl, interestingly enough, who I get to occasionally coach against now, to play at Holy Cross as an 18-year-old. And it was something that was an opportunity I just couldn't pass up. And so I wouldn't have changed it for anything. It's definitely different now. And in terms of like, you don't see it really at all, unless your guy's like a first round draft pick in the NHL draft. You don't really see guys going in at 18 anymore. So I do feel like I was fortunate to be able to do that. And but it was an adjustment for me, no doubt. I can see why it doesn't happen. My first year, my first like 2 months of the season, I was wide-eyed. And it took me a while to figure it out and adjust. But thankfully, was able to kind of make that transition. And as I said, Coach Pearl was awesome with me in terms of sticking with me and giving me the opportunity to kind of figure it out on the fly. So.
If you were coming through now with the way that the landscape is, do you think you would have found like a different junior league that would have worked? Would you have done like a post-grad year somewhere? Or were you just ready? Because I mean, I don't know.
I think I was ready. Like I enjoyed, I mean, I wouldn't change anything about the way my process went. I was very fortunate. I had junior opportunities. I had boarding school PG opportunities. But it was just the right thing for me at that time. And Holy Cross was in a really good spot as a program at the time. And to be able to step in at a Division I school, a really good academic school, and be able to play was something that I probably wouldn't have passed up, even if there was a different path option available.
You did that 1 year in the ECHL, and I it was just 1 year. But like, what did you learn from that?
Gosh, that's a great question. I think one thing I learned is how good all the players were. I mean, it was a big time step up for me. I know people when you start to talk about hockey beyond the college level, it's people look at it and they're like, oh, it's the third best league or whatever in North America. But the players there was like just a step up for me from a hockey perspective, and especially you see like the crispness of their passing and the ability to kind of catch passes on the fly and things like that were just small details. I think that's maybe the thing you learn the most is how little details make the difference between some of these guys that are playing at the highest level and some of the guys that are playing maybe in the American League. So I thought it was a really good experience for me. I never had really any intentions of having like a career. I knew it was going to be short-lived, but just have the opportunity to play and continue playing and have some fun with it. And I got a chance to travel around the West Coast of the U.S. and do it on somebody else's dime was nice too.
That's not bad. That's a good way to be. And then when did you realize you wanted to coach? Because right after you were done, you went right to Canterbury as an assistant.
Yeah. I knew for a long time that it was something that I had passion about, but I think I was probably much more on like the trajectory of the finance world. Did internship my junior year in college. I actually had a pretty big change moment in my life. My sister passed away my senior year in college, and it kind of changed for me my perspective on things to really just want to do something that I was passionate about and that I knew would make me happy. And so that was kind of a big changing moment for me to say, you know what, it's not just about kind of this career path. It's more about finding that passion. And I knew coaching was something I always had interest in. I think if you ask people about what I did well as a hockey player, hockey sense, understanding of the game was probably my greatest strengths. I mean, I was 5'8 when I played in college and not a very good skater. So if those two things don't generally translate too well to a collegiate or professional hockey player. So I had to figure out other ways to be successful. And so I knew that I figured my skills would translate in that way. So again, I think huge credit from my path to Paul Pearl as well. So I played in the East Coast League for that year. And then I got an opportunity to go on and be like a volunteer assistant at Holy Cross for half a year before going to Canterbury. And I learned so much from that process. So I was really fortunate to kind of have that experience as well and solidify the fact that that's something that I wanted to do.
And that was Patty McCarthy at that time, right? At Canterbury?
It was, yeah. And actually, I have a pretty long history with Patty, too. My older brother actually is a Canterbury grad. And so he played for, Peter Levine was the head coach at the time, but Patty McCarthy was the assistant coach. So I've known Patty for a long time and just an awesome, awesome human. I actually was maybe more excited for them when they won than what we won this year. I've stayed in touch with Patty all through the years. And I'll have to send you, I have a good picture of Patty and I. We had dinner a couple of weeks after New England tournament game with us with our trophy. So I'm just so happy for him and all the hard work that he's put in and finding that success.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was pumped for him because he was like, I was looking back at Canterbury's records over the years and then to see them have the success they've had in the last couple of years and just how happy, genuinely happy. Like I interviewed you guys after and, you know, you guys were pumped, obviously, but you've been there 3 out of the last 5 years.
Sure.
But him, it was like just and it was it's so cool when that happens just because.
Yeah.
Clearly so well-deserved.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And for you, like, so you do those 3 years at Canterbury, and then you get the Kent job in 2013. Yeah. So you have a really good hockey background. You have those 3 years. What was it about Kent? Were you surprised you got it after only 3 years as an assistant?
I would say absolutely I was surprised. Threw my hat in the ring. And I think it was important to Kent when they were hiring in this position that they hired a school person. Right? Mm-hmm. From what my understanding is, they had all sorts of interest from NHL scouts, college assistant coaches, things like that. But they really wanted somebody with a boarding school background that would know how to kind of navigate this landscape and be fully bought into the community and understand the values and things like that. So I know that was an important part of the process for them. But to be honest, I definitely was a little bit surprised when I got the opportunity. I know how competitive it was for the job and felt very fortunate to be able to have that opportunity. So was really excited. It was kind of for me, a dream job. If you had asked me the year before, what do you want to be in 10 years? It would have been like head coach at a Founders League school. So to be able to do that in short time and get that opportunity was awesome. And I was very fortunate when I got here too, to have some awesome assistant coaches. Garrison Smith, who was with me for probably my first, I want to say 6 years. He had been here for a bunch of years with Matt Herr before me. So to have that assistant coach who had the experience of what hockey at Kent looked like, navigating kind of the admissions process and all of that was super helpful to me as I transitioned too.
Yeah.
And you mentioned sort of your assistants, Patty McCarthy and Paul Pearl, but like coming up playing or even your early years as a coach, who are maybe some other people that really helped get you going along there?
Yeah. Great question. Two people that I think are integral in my hockey experience. First of all, my dad coached me most of my life, like the head coach of most of my teams up through my Pee Wee years, and then stayed on as kind of an assistant coach through most of my minor hockey. He wasn't really a hockey guy. He played football in high school. I don't think he ever really played too formal of hockey or just kind of pond hockey and things like that. But he's one of the most passionate people I've ever met. And to see that translate into like his coaching and his love for athletics and all of the life lessons that you learn through athletics, that for me was hugely impactful. And to see the influence that he could have on people in his role as a coach was something that I certainly wanted to be able to pass along to other people as well. And the other guy that comes to mind for me is a guy named John DeNorcia. He runs the Youth Devils organization, or I shouldn't say runs it. He's the coaching director. He coached me at Bantam and has become one of my closest friends and just an awesome mentor for me. And I learned a ton from him as a coach. And I think a lot of times people think of the coach and they think of the kind of tough love and almost more that John Tortorella style coach.
Yeah,
John,
good cop, bad cop.
Exactly. But John DeNorcia is one of those coaches that like you want to play for because you just have so much respect for him and he cares so much about you that you don't want to disappoint him. And so to this day, he's one of my closest friends and somebody who's a huge influence on me as a coach. And again, wanting to get into this business, I guess.
You were with the Youth Devils for all your youth hockey career, right?
I played with the New Jersey Colonials growing up for most of it. And then I transitioned to Bantam over to the Youth Devils. We actually had quite an awesome team. We actually won USA Hockey Nationals at U14. I guess my first U14 year, we had a really good team and kind of different, I think, than what you see now. There was like less in the way of super teams that you see now, especially with the way the academies have proliferated and things like that. So we had a ton of Division I college hockey players on our team. Nobody that's really kind of made it big from a pro perspective. But yeah, we ended up being Brandon Dubinsky's Alaska team and Team Alaska in the finals, which is a cool memory for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's sick.
It was a fun group. Yeah.
And they had you. You had, your team had you. You're here right now. This is
something
big
like
time.
That. Yeah,
this
something
is the like pros. Yeah, it's interesting though, because like with the Colonials and then with the Youth Devils, like you see a lot of kids now jumping from youth team to youth team to youth team. Yeah. Is that super new? And then sort of what's been your reaction to it? I mean, a lot of people say it's bad. Some say it's good. Like, what's your take on kind of that?
Well, I think it is. It's definitely newer than when I was playing. That was kind of not really, that was outside of the norm, I think, when I was growing. I'm not a fan of it. I think when you start chasing kind of these championships and outcomes rather than the process, like, kind of gets away from the point of it. I think there's some other downfalls to it, too. Like, at the end of the day, like, who do you end up playing? If all the good players from one area are on one team, then how's everybody else going to get better? And you end up adding to cost because of travel and all of those expenses. And I love the rivalries that we had as kids growing up from organization to organization, particularly within our area. And I feel like some of that gets lost in the bouncing around. And I understand it. Everybody, as I said, is trying to put themselves in the best position to kind of continue to grow and progress. But I would love to see it be different. I'm always enamored by and love kind of the model of the way Minnesota runs their youth hockey. And it's just a really cool thing to see that some of those kids that end up graduating high school but playing hockey together since they were mites. And that's something that I wish was more common kind of across the hockey world. But it is what it is. I think that everything kind of progresses. But it's nice to see that Minnesota's kind of been able, for the most part, hold on to that.
Why do you think that is? I know we mentioned kids are jumping around here, but like, what contributes to that?
The jumping around part?
Yeah, and the fact, like, obviously Minnesota, they still have Division I commits playing for their public high school in there. And they're, like, it's the biggest thing, and it's all over social media. And, like, why do you think that hasn't really? Because it used to be, there used to be guys who Jay Pandolfo played for Burlington High School. Like, there are things like that where, like, that could happen. That doesn't really happen anymore. Why do you think that
it's a great question. Like, I think the easy answer in less traditional markets is there's just not enough a concentration of players. I mean, obviously Minnesota has that, right? So they can kind of stay in their location and still play competitive hockey and not have to kind of create these conglomerates. But, you know, I think the other part of it is that's unfortunate is how much of a business it's all become. And there's a sales pitch around every corner in terms of youth hockey, which is unfortunate. And I think some people are in it for the wrong reasons. But, it's hard to put a finger on it for sure. I think some of it is that culture, the culture of kind of youth sports being professionalized. And some of it is, I think, the investment that families put into it and hoping to see some sort of outcome that is really tangible, as opposed to just kind of the life lessons and kids get from playing youth sports that I wish was more prevalent and more important as an outcome.
And it's interesting because at the beginning of the year, I remember talking to Andrew Will and Mike Kennedy on this, and it was more so along the lines of kids staying in the area for a long time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of kids don't stay around long enough to be NHL draft prospects in prep. But what's funny is, Gio DeJulian did that this year. And Gio stuck around and had a really good season, seemed to boost his stock quite a bit, obviously had a really good run to the Large School Championship, then went off and had a good exposure out in Vegas, which is not a bad place to have a national tournament.
Yeah,
But he seemed to really boost his stock this year. I'm curious, like, do you think, like, first of all, what do you think of his season? And then also, do you think he could serve as an example to other potential draft prospects down the road saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to stay in prep for my draft year instead of going off to juniors?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, first of all, he had an incredible year. And I loved seeing growth in his game this year. I love seeing, and it was less to do with, I mean, he got obviously improved on the ice and continued to get better from a skill set perspective. But I love seeing his growth and his mental approach to the game. He's a guy that's can be hard on himself at times. And finding ways to better channel that and also just be an awesome teammate. I thought that was great to see his development and growth in that area. And I think that's going to help him a really long ways down the road as he continues to play. I mean, you watch guys in the NHL, they make a mistake and, you know, they shake it off and they're back out there the next shift like nothing happened. I feel like that's the part of his game that really developed this year, like recognizing that you're going to make mistakes and it's okay, and you just have to bounce back from it. How you respond to that is the most important part. I feel like that was the part of his game that really grew the most. And I really enjoyed watching. I mean, I think he's just proof that you can do it. And the most important thing is doing what's right for you. And that comes back to the same conversation we talked about with my putt process. Like, I had 1,000 people tell me, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this. And for me, the right thing was to do what I did and stay at Delbarton in New Jersey and go off to play at Holy Cross as an 18-year-old. That was just the thing that made me most comfortable. And that's when I think you're going to thrive as a player. So that's saying, I don't think it's wrong if it's the right thing for him. Listen, Alex LaFerriere, we had a couple of years ago, and he left us after his junior year and went out and crushed it in Des Moines and definitely improved his draft stock too when he went out to the USHL and had a great year. And I mean, it's great watching him score his or have an assist last night in the Kings playoff game. But just, I mean, pretty cool to watch him as a rookie playing with Adrian Kempe and Andre Kopitar yesterday. That was pretty cool.
I thought they might come back in that game. I know. I want to see a nice comeback, yeah. But it was close.
Yeah. But just, I think there's a lot of ways to get to the same result and finding the path that makes the most sense for you from a holistic perspective and not thinking, I've got to do this or I have to do that. There's a lot of people that want to tell you, you have to do X to get to where you want to get to. And I just think staying true to yourself and what makes the most sense for you and your family is probably the best path. And for Gio, that was being with us. And listen, I know for Gio, like the education piece was really important. The opportunity to go to Cornell and continue to develop his academic skills here while he was here was really important too.
Yeah, he's going to have his plate full with academics when he gets to college.
For sure. For sure.
And the best part of Gio sticking around was you got Gary Thorne calling your games. I think
that was amazing.
That was superior. That was awesome, Pat.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It was just so cool. And Gary was so gracious and we're so thankful to have him. But it was just such a cool experience for our kids. And I'll tell you what, that game, we played Canterbury in that game. That was maybe the most intense, exciting game we played all year. We couldn't have had a better game for Gary to call. It was just so fast-paced. I mean, they play with so much speed, and we had no problem playing with them at that pace. It was just a really fun hockey game.
Yeah. No, that was awesome. And it's interesting because you have a kid like Gio, who, again, stayed for senior year. But it feels like more and more kids are rushing it to juniors. Kids are leaving prep early. And then on the other side of that, kids are leaving juniors early to try to go play college. Like, why do you think players are rushing to junior hockey so quick? Like, I know it's closer to college, but like, what's the pull?
I think that's a part of it is that they see they've been told or they see like, this is what I have to do to get to that next step. But I also think that it's that same thing goes back to that social media. This is what everybody's doing and that kind of peer pressure of that race to nowhere mentality. I've just always been of the mindset, like conquer where you're at before you move to the next step. And that's the part that I'm hoping we'll see a little bit more of. We may see less guys who are reclassifying when they come in here. But if we can see guys kind of finish out through their senior year and graduate, like, I'm yet to see a guy be harmed in that process with us, that they kind of come through their process, they graduate, they go off and maybe they have to play a year or two or junior before they get to their Division I school. Or some of our guys are still able to step right in and play at the Division III level right away and have success. And so that's kind of another option that works for them. But just having a more holistic approach to the whole process, I think, is important.
It's interesting because you mentioned guys staying till their senior year wanting to do that. There's always not just people telling all these kids what they need to do, but there's a lot of people telling prep what it needs to do and evolving. And there's academies and there's full season teams that play all year. And I'm curious, do you think prep needs to evolve at all? Are there areas that can be improved? I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure you always want to be evolving and getting better, but I don't think we need to change everything that we are to try to meet some sort of narrative. And I'll tell you, like, this comes up a lot in the conversations with coaches about admissions process and interest from I feel like at Kent, we're very fortunate to not really be running into a lot of that. And I think that's actually a good thing. I mean, listen, there's options out there for every, right? If the academy option is the right thing for you and your family, that's great. That I think that's appropriate. And that's what you're looking for. Then that's great. But we don't tend to cross over with those academies too much. Kids, if they're looking at Kent, tend to have values that are a little bit different in terms of what they're looking for in their experience. And so it's, again, a little bit more of a well-rounded viewpoint, a little bit more of a concern or care for academics. And so we haven't found ourselves in too much crossover with a lot of the academies. And that's not to say the academies are the right thing for some people, and they should pursue that. But I wouldn't want to see prep hockey change too much, because I think it's a really nice option for our kids that are looking for that. One of the things that I talk about too with our kids that come through the admissions process, there's something really cool about playing for your community. And I know a lot of these academies are linked to schools, but come to watch a game at Kent on a Wednesday or a Saturday, the place is jammed with students. Like, it's fun. And it's one of the last few places, meaning New England boarding schools, where you can play for your community, but also play really high level hockey. And you can walk down the hall of your classes on Monday, and people know what was going on in your hockey game on Saturday. And that's just a really cool experience that is hard to replicate. And short of the NCAA and maybe Minnesota high school hockey, like, you don't really get that experience anywhere. And again, it's the right thing for some people. Maybe the academy model or full season AAA is right for some people, but I don't think you need to put it all in one box.
Well, it's interesting. It seems like some prep teams are like Kimball Union, I know, has switched to Cushing. Dexter's starting to do this, where they sort of have a team. They play together in the fall with a different team name, obviously different coach, because it must be legal.
Sure.
And then you have the prep season in the winter. Do you see more schools potentially doing something more like that?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that growing more. And it's conversations that we're engaged into, and just making sure to kind of keep our finger on the pulse and see how that all kind of goes. There's the PPP that I know some schools have been engaged with also. Mm. So there's kind of all sorts of different. I could see that being the evolution a little bit. We've had great relationships with a lot of split season teams recently, and a lot of our guys have played there. But it's certainly something that we're always kind of investigating and looking at as well. And we're kind of keeping our finger on the pulse. And I think at the end of the day, for me, it's like, I just want to support whatever our families want. And if that's trying to work through to create some sort of model like you're describing Cushing, then great. Like, we'll work to do that. We'll try to find a solution that makes the most sense. But we want to do whatever it is that our families feel most supported with, and also fits obviously within what our community values are, Ken.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's an interesting thing, because there's lots of talk about all that stuff. And I think one of the biggest things that everybody wants out of prep is, where's my college commitment? When am I committing to a college? And you always see it at every age group, every level. Everybody wants to eventually commit to college, which is legitimate. I mean, prep is great at getting that to happen. You've been doing this for a while now, and I'm wondering, what's one of the things that kids and families, like a misconception about getting recruited, or something that people kind of get wrong with recruitment that you see and you're like, a lot of people are, or some people are doing this incorrect?
That's a great question. I think there's a lot of answers to that question. I mean, start with, like, if you commit as a going into your junior year, like, that doesn't really mean a whole hill of beans, to be honest. Like, you still got to get there, and you still got to earn your way. And at the end of the day, these college coaches need to find success to put food on the table for the family. So it doesn't really mean a whole hill of beans, and especially with the way the transfer portal is now. So, like, again, just kind of being process oriented is the most important thing. Continue to get better. That should continue to have fun and get better and develop your skills. Like, that's the thing that should really matter the most to you. And if you get driven by that, like, of course, I recognize that's a part of the process, and we're going to support our kids in that process of the college recruitment. But if you make that the sole focus, I've seen so many kids get derailed by that piece. And so really just focusing on the things you can control, which is being the best teammate you can, being the best hockey player you can, continuing to grow and make sure you have strong academic profile. Those are the things that you should really kind of focus on and emphasize. I think it's also the biggest misconception is just how hard it is. Like, there are so few spots available. And so I think everyone thinks they're going to be that player. And that's there's nothing wrong with that. We want all of our kids to strive to that. But I think having a really realistic perspective of how hard that is to do, and how hard it is to play college hockey is really important as you go into this process. And I think recognizing that there are some really great opportunities, that maybe it's not always going to be a Division I opportunity. Maybe it's a great Division III opportunity at an awesome school. Maybe it's an ACHA opportunity at a great school. But just being able to kind of continue to pursue your passion is really what I hope would be the student's focus. But we do everything we possibly can to support our kids in that process. And at the end of the day, and we say this to our kids and through our recruiting process and everything, like, we don't have the red phone that I'm going to call up Jay Pandolfo and say, hey, you got to take so-and-so. Like, we're going to advocate for our kids, but it's really up to them and their performance on the ice. And our goal is to just create a platform for them to be able to show off their abilities to the coaches that they want to play for. And I think that's something that we do really well.
Have you seen the recruitment process change at all over the last 10 years?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously with the change in the NCAA in terms of when communication can occur and when they can make offers, that was a huge change. The transfer portal has been a huge change also. Obviously, the fifth year with COVID. So there's been massive changes in the last couple of years, I think, that unfortunately has kind of hurt some of the younger kids, right? The fifth year has created a logjam. The transfer portal has, I think that transfer portal is, I'm actually a fan of it because what I hated was schools that would over-recruit kids and then just stuff kids in the stands and those kids had no recourse. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually a fan of that part of it. There are elements of it that I don't like. Of course, like a school like Holy Cross, who's trying to work its way up the ladder, finds a hidden gem and then they lose that kid in the transfer portal. That part of it I dislike, but you know, I think some good with the bad, but I think all of that also impacts our kids, right? So the transfer portal makes the slots even fewer. I am a fan of the fact that they changed the communication piece later in the process for the kids. So whatever it is, January 1st communication during their sophomore year, and then opportunity to receive offers August 1st going into their junior year. That part of it I think is great. Kids that were committing at 13, 14 years old, it was kind of crazy. And again, I think created a ton of pressure in that process for kids that were too young to even really be considering it.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Because I remember I've mentioned to Evan a couple times, like in middle school, Jake Wise was God to us because, oh my God, eighth grade, he's committed to BU and Oliver Wallstrom, Maine, Harvard, and then BC. But you also mentioned the logjam with the transfer portal and maybe kids have to do extra seasons in juniors, whether it's USHL, BCHL. Do you think that might encourage, kind of along what we were going along the lines of earlier, do you think that might encourage some of the better players to kind of stay towards prep when they're juniors and seniors?
Yeah, good question. I hope so. And whether it encourages them or not, it may make it more of a reality that they have to, because there's less availability of opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, I hope it will. I think that'll start to relieve itself. I think this upcoming year will be the last year of kind of the year kids. So it'll probably start to relieve itself a little bit, at least that portion of it. But again, I hope that our kids are most motivated by staying at Kent because it's the right fit for them. And they know they're going to continue to develop as players. And they've got tons of examples of guys who have done it before them and have found plenty of success. So there's that opportunity to have that balance in your life, to continue to have academics be a focus for you while still getting better at hockey and still kind of having those opportunities in front of you.
And the logjam's interesting. I'm working on a story on that now of how there aren't a ton of spots in the USHL right now. It's that fifth-year senior thing because the transfer portal, teams would rather bring in a kid who's played 2 or 3 years of college hockey rather than a freshman. And then they can also let that freshman marinate a bit in the USHL. But for kids coming out of prep schools and different places around the country, there's not those spots available. You're gonna have to work your way up the lineup, and a lot of kids are now looking towards other junior leagues. How do you kind of help advise players when they are looking for a junior league and what to look for? Like, what are some of your objectives there?
I think the first thing is just you got to be wanted, right? Wherever you're going, like, find a place where you're gonna have opportunity because of that kind of competitive nature of it, the logjam part of it too. Like, being where you're wanted, that goes a long way. You're still going to have to perform no matter where you go. But if you're somewhere where they have a ton of love for you, they're going to give you more opportunity. And so they're going to give you a little bit of a longer runway. And so I think that's a big piece of it. Obviously, you have to look at playing style and does that match what your playing style is. I think it's important for guys to look at what am I going to be at that next level and what's going to help me develop the skills to be that. We've got Teddy Mulgrave for us as a guy that played on our power play this year, and he's committed to go to St. Lawrence. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think Teddy's going to be a power play guy at St. Lawrence, right? So I think it's most important that Teddy goes and develops his skills that are going to be really effective for him when he gets to that next level. So for Teddy, it's less about finding a place where I'm going to be a guy in the power play, but more about finding a place that's going to help me continue to develop as a reliable 200-foot defenseman, can add a little bit of offense, but it's going to shut down the other team's best players, and finding the team that has the right fit for him and expectations while still kind of giving them that opportunity is, I think, those are the types of things we think.
And it's interesting because this season's team, you guys had one of the best defense, arguably the top shutdown defenseman in prep, and arguably the top forward in all of prep. There's a lot of those. I'm just going to say arguably to satisfy everybody. You guys had a very good roster. Was that sort of your expectation coming into this season that, all right, we're going to do some damage?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we had a big senior class, so we knew that coming in, and big senior class of impactful guys, right? Aiden Hopewell's effectively been our starter for 3 years in goal between Denver Danfoos and Teddy Mulgrave and Braden Pullman. Those guys coming back on all, as seniors on the defensive end, like we knew we were going to have really solid defensive core guys. Again, all three of them had been with us for 3 years and knew what to expect coming in and had kind of proven themselves at this level already. And then up front, like we had a pretty seasoned group of seniors, guys that we had good depth in our scoring. And so obviously Gio was the catalyst for most of that, but we had a really good depth in scoring. I mean, Owen Mahar had a fantastic year for us. I think he's a guy that's just going to take off. He actually just signed with the Victoria Grizzlies in the BCHL for next year, which I think is going to be a great fit for him. But he's a guy that I just absolutely love as a player. Jack Roberts had a really good year for us. This guy that can put the puck in the net. And again, a guy that's had 3 years of prep experience. This was second year with us. Patrick Walsh, who had been with us for 4 years, and he was the MVP at the Avon tournament. He's another guy that just kind of had added to that depth of our scoring. And obviously, we had some young guys that were super impactful also, but coming into the year, we had really high expectations. And I think obviously thrilled with where we finished and especially the run in the playoffs. Wish we had had a little bit of a better middle part of the season, because I really feel like we could compete with anybody in New England and would have, you know, been able to make some noise in that Elite Eight tournament too. Played with some of the best teams all year. Like we beat Avon in the championship of their tournament, beat Salisbury early in the year. We had a really good game with KUA. So I felt like we could play with anybody, and just we had a little bit of an inconsistent middle part of our season, unfortunately. But I think we really hit our stride there towards the end of the season. And
yeah, you guys did. You absolutely did. Pat, you have anything else?
Yeah, actually going back to when you were talking about Teddy Mulgrave and he might not be a power play guy at St. Lawrence. Like, if you're sort of having those conversations with any of those players, I guess, what are those like? Because they've come up through the ranks. Say you have a kid, he's putting up points. Not everyone's going to go to college and put up points. What are those conversations like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I remember having a conversation with one of the coaches when I was playing in the East Coast League. And one of the things he said to me is like, figure out what you're good at and be the best in the world at it. And I've always thought that was a really, really shrewd advice. I think we try to be really honest with kids in our process. And even when we're talking about college recruitment, like what I always say to kids, like, I'm going to tell you where I think you fit. And then you tell me where you want to be. And we'll do everything we can to help to get you to your goals. Right. And so trust me, I've been wrong. I often tell this story. There's a kid that I had for my second and my third year at Kent. His name's Ter Linden, and he's playing in the American League right now. And he played at RPI and he played at Penn State. And, you know, he didn't have a great Kent career. And we tried to give him some opportunities senior year, and it just didn't go his way. And so I remember after senior year, I said to him, I was like, you should probably just consider going to school and playing some club hockey and having fun. And he disagreed with me, which was fine. And I appreciate that. And he went and he crushed it in junior for 2 years and got an opportunity at RPI and had a great career at RPI and then grad transferred to Penn State. Now he's playing in the American Hockey League. So I actually tell our players that story all the time. Like, hey, I'm wrong. I'm often wrong. I'm going to give you my best advice. I'm doing my best up here. But when it comes down to it, like, we're going to do everything we can to support you and your goals if we can help you get there. So we try to be really honest with our kids about our evaluation of them as players, where we think they fit. And that's nothing. What I just said is nothing I haven't told Teddy before. And again, I hope he proves me wrong. Like, if that's the role he wants to take on at St. Lawrence, I hope he goes and he becomes their number one power play guy. But I know what he's really good at. I know what he was super effective at for us. There's nobody, as Evan said, there's nobody I'd want on the ice in New England trying to protect a one goal lead with a minute and a half left in the game. So for me, be the best at what you are. And for me, he is the best in New England at that. And so continuing to hone those skills, I think, would be really shrewd for him.
The Ter Linden story is interesting because that doesn't just show, oh, Dale's wrong on this. It also shows that development can happen later. It doesn't have to be immediate, right? I think a lot of kids expect, oh, when I'm 14, 15, 16, I have to be getting looked at by colleges. Yeah. I have to be fully developed. But the reality is there are a lot of kids, especially goalies, who they don't commit until they're in juniors when they're 18 or 19, right? So I think there's also telling kids that as well, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And the part of the story that I may have left out there. So Ter was actually, he played a year and a half of JV hockey at Kent. He was arguably the hardest working kid on campus during that whole process, right? So while I didn't see him getting there at the time of his senior year in high school, I'm not entirely shocked either. Like, I knew what his work ethic was like. And I knew how passionate he was about hockey. He's one of those guys that just loved hockey. He wanted to be on the ice all the time. And he had skill, right? It's just kind of one of those things, put it all together for sure. I mean, late bloomers, that happens all the time. You know, even Teddy Mulgrave, I talked about a guy, Nick Marciano, who we had, who's at Princeton now. You know, those two guys came to us as sophomores, different timing, but very similar trajectories, where kind of came to us as our seventh defenseman. And by the end of their sophomore year, we're kind of in that 4-5 mix. And then by the time their junior year rolls around, all of a sudden they're the best defenseman on our team. So that process happens at different times for different guys.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. Pat, anything more for Dale?
No, I think that's all.
I think we've hit everything. Yeah, I feel like we got the whole picture. We got the team, we got big picture stuff. So lots of that. Well, Dale, thank you so much for coming on. Looking forward to you guys next season, and I'm sure you'll have a whole new crop or some new crop of good young players that'll catch people's attention.
Absolutely. And, thanks so much for having me on, guys. And yeah, for sure. Look forward to connecting in the fall and talking about next year.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. Well, that's been this episode of Rinkwise. I'm Evan Marinofsky. That's Patrick Donnelly. Thank you so much to Dale Reinhart. And we'll see you around the rinks.